My name is Toby Youngreis, and welcome. And this next hour is going to be about one word, romance. So if you think you're in the wrong room, I'll close my eyes and you have a chance to leave. Anyway, we're going to talk about romance. I'll quickly introduce myself. Frank, help me. I have a degree in family counseling and therapy. I did do marriage counseling. I don't usually do it now. My wife does marriage counseling right now and family therapy. I've written 5 books. I have published humor in many of the magazines. I have a humor slant. I've been in show business. I've done commercials. I've done modeling work. I've given parenting courses at some of the schools. I'm in a barbershop quartet. We rehearse every Monday night. And I speak on radio and TV, mostly about the book, How to Be a Great Husband, or How to Be Its Successor, How to Be an Even Greater Husband. And it's a popular subject. Like on every Valentine's Day and Mother's Day, I call up the radio station. We have a good relationship, and they call me on, and we talk about the closeness in marriage and subjects about that. This subject is supposed to be about mature romantic ideas and mature things to do to fan the flames and keep the romance going. Before I get into that, which is the reason you're here, I'd like to go over certain principles that I feel very strongly about marriage. I myself am married 49 and a half years, and thank God. And I just want to say a couple of things about, and these are general principles. And then we'll get to some of the places you can take your romantic object and go for a little walk down a country lane along a stream and things like that. First of all, attitude is everything. You want to be best friends. The subject of marriage is being best friends. And that's why you should get married. It's true. You need somebody to bring in the income. You need somebody to raise the children. You need somebody to vacuum the living room. There are many different reasons to get married. But the real reason is, you want to be best friend. You want to have a best friend throughout your lifetime. And you want your best friend to be the person you're married to, not a co-worker, not your racquetball partner, people down the block or something like that. You want your best friend to be your mate, because if you're going to spend so much time together and raise a family together, you want to be best friends. And to be best friends, it's a lot of work. It's daily work. Fair warning. Now, if you have a wonderful close marriage, then you don't have to adopt some of the ideas you hear today from me. These are the things that worked for me, or things that I see and things that I think are very good ideas. But if you're doing well, as long as you have the mindset to be the best closest friend to your mate as you can be, then do it your way. Do it your way. You may not like racquetball or walking along the stream and wetting your feet and things like that, stepping on an old fish hook. So you might like cleaner activities. Do it your way, and if it's working for you, that's what's important. That's what's important. Another thing about marriage I like to say is don't settle. Don't settle. Supposing your marriage is pretty good. It's all right. Don't settle. Always reach for higher. Always strive for higher. Because your reward, I told you, is having this best friend throughout your whole lifetime. And don't settle and say, well, he's a workaholic. He loves his work, and he comes home 11 o'clock at night and falls asleep and gets up next morning, gets into his car and goes off to work, and it's working out. We're happy. We don't fight. Something like that. But don't settle for a medium marriage. Just try, like with many other things in life, just to up it a notch on a regular basis. On a regular basis. Don't settle and say, this is my lot. I'm going to be there for 60, 70 years. We're going to be married. and I just have to deal with it, I would keep striving to do better. Keep striving to do better. I happen to be a woman sympathizer, so a fair warning to all the men. Okay, my book, How to Be an Even Greater Husband, was written to, even though it's the husband who's become a better husband, I'm a woman sympathizer, and I want a woman to get a fair shake and to be treated like a lady, and to have the best marital experience possible. So you'll forgive me, it'll come out during my talk a little bit that I'm a woman sympathizer. Now this is for you women, so men don't listen for a minute. If I wrote here just a catchphrase, teach him, don't test him. A woman should teach a man what she needs. In a nice way, teach him what she needs. Don't test him means if he really loved me, who is really intuitive, and I chose him over the other boyfriend I discarded who knew everything about me, he would really know if he was into my soul. Well, that lasts, a year or two or three or 10 years of misery, but you really want to teach him what you need. So, for example, let's say you're a family, you grew up and everybody got birthday cards. Okay, and you got married, and a woman never gets a birthday card. Well, she's beginning to wonder, she looks around, maybe the mail is late, maybe it fell behind the dresser, maybe he was a little busy and distracted, but after a few years, she doesn't get a birthday card, and for some reason, it's very, very important to her. It means to her, as it was when she was growing up, that he remembers her, and it's important, she thinks, for him to remember her birthday. And so a woman should teach him. Say, honey, something? I was just thinking about it. She's been thinking about it for 10 years. I'm just thinking about it. I would love to get a birthday card. I've seen some of my friends. I saw on their dresser a birthday card. So, it'd be very, very nice. And he listens. Okay. I'm also a man sympathizer, after a woman sympathizer, that he says, I'm going to get her a birthday card. So he goes out and gets her a birthday card. And he gives it to her on her birthday. And she is so excited. She has to give him positive reinforcement. She just taught something. She has to tell him how appreciative she is that she got the birthday card, using this as an example. And she say to him, honey, you remembered. Of course, she told him just 2 days ago. You remember it. And she makes a big fuss. So for the rest of her life, she's going to get a birthday card. Why? Because she didn't test. She got tired of testing him. He flunked every test. So she wants to teach him and teach him what she wants. And this should be for men and women. Teach your mate what you want. Don't say if he were instinctive, all-knowing, I leave him all the clues, I am indirect, I give him indirect messages, I leave notes on the edge of his nearest tefillin bag, and nothing is happening, be very open and nice about it, just instructive. And again, if you get positive results, positive reinforcement is such a wonderful weapon in solidifying, something new, okay? And you can interrupt me with any questions anytime, by the way. Okay. One thing about wonderful marriages is that you need God's blessings, that you can have the best intentions and take the best courses, but God forbid, never things happen in different families. Illness, financial setbacks, extended family problems, health problems, that you can have the best intentions, but they put such a heavy weight on the marriage that you're more interested in survival and making everything work, and you wish you could think about which stream you should walk down, in the summertime. But still, our families are sometimes hit with bad times or certain times and health problems and financial setbacks. So again, as much as we want everything to work out so nicely, we have to pray very, very hard. And hopefully Hashem will listen and spare us of too much of the negative things going on. Marriage is learning on the job. Okay, let's face it. How did they meet? Well, he looked across the room and he says, "She's cute." And she looked across the room and she said, "He's cute." And they, you know, talk a little bit, and however the process happens, they get married. Now, they don't have to go through any formalized training in order to get married. Marriage is so complicated. You know, learning how to communicate, 1,000 specifics, a part of the relationship process that there should be. And maybe someday we'll all live to see it. In high schools, in colleges, you know, communication skills. How to listen. You know, when you go cold into marriage, you're really learning on the job. And there's no other, you know, if you want to become an apprentice painter someplace, you probably still have to go to some kind of school, get a certificate and a license and something like that. You got to get something, a piece of paper. If you get married, you know, it's true. You have to, you know, get your marriage certificate and take a blood test in some states. And, all right. But still, it's such a complicated relationship. People go to medical school for years and years and years. Lawyers go to school and people learning the financial trade in every profession. There's so much schooling that goes into it. And here is a marriage, a complicated a complex relationship that needs so much fine tuning on a daily basis. So you know, without training, you know, it is a big challenge, and that's why it's work every day. Next thing is I'd like you to get to know everything about each other as mates. Now, this is the general principles I generally run through. This is my opinion. Get everything to know about each other. Everything happens to me. If I go to the corner to buy a quart of milk, I have 4 adventures. And so how am I going to tell my wife? She's busy. So I write it down on an envelope. Okay? So I write it down. You know, when I see her next, I'll give her the envelope. Okay, I'll read this to her. And then, you know, the envelope starts getting full after a couple of days. You know, she has a busy week and you have a busy week, and you want to share it with her. You want to know everything about each other. Because a lost day, a day that you haven't communicated and shared what happened that day, is a day lost forever. And so hopefully at least you get together frequently enough to catch up and to know, because that's how you get to know your partner, your friend, what they're thinking about, their values, their attitudes, their dreams. That's how you have to know them. You can't just be nearby or in the same house. You have to share things that are going on in your minds and your hearts. And so get to know everything about each other. Now, you may say, well, you know, why do I want to be smothered by a man? Let's say a woman says that. Why do I want to be smothered? You know, I have my girlfriends. I go to exercise class. I go to cheer. I go to my Norvi class. You know, all sorts of things. Why do I have to? Does he have to know everything about everything? You know, something. I don't like the idea of being smothered. Rethink it, that it's not a smothering experience where somebody's invading your rights and your rights of privacy. You want to share. You want to share. Why do you have a best friend for? A best friend to share. You know what happened to me today at work? You know, blah, 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 blah. Or, you know, I saw my friend, you know, is taking a course in something that looks so interesting. I think that I'd like to take it. So get to know everything about each other. And I give an example. My wife goes to an all-women's Bible class, a Torah class, Chumash class. And so let's say if I'm making rounds and I have a few stops to make, and one day I realize that one of the stops I have to make is near the shul where she takes the class. It's for all women. So I park the car, go in the back way, sneak into the back of the room, and kind of sit there and hope nobody will notice me, just so maybe I can catch her eye and, something like that. And then I can go on my way. Okay, so of course, what happens is she's concentrating and seven other people turn around. they all go, psst, 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 psst. She looks at her husband, she gets up, and she walks to the back and she says, "Can I have one free moment alone without you?" "Oh, hiya, honey. And he slithers out the door, and she goes back to her seat. But privately, he's happy because he surprised her. He let her know that he thinks about her in the middle of a business work day instead of everything else. And she is so flattered that he really came. You know what I mean? Just to, she feels embarrassed, but she feels flattered that he gave her the attention. So this is what I mean by, anyway, get to know everything about each other. Okay, which, of course, one of the chapters in my book is surprises. I don't want to get into that kind of subject, but surprises are a wonderful thing. To come up with surprises all the time means you're always thinking and trying to keep your marriage fresh and alert and growing and exciting. So always think of some kind of surprises. And I always say that men and women, men listen to the to your wives, because she will let you know what she really wants. You know, my wife once said she wanted she loved caraway seeds on her bread, you know, rye bread, and she can't get it too often. So you know, what did I do? Caraway seeds. How do you spell it? Anyway, so I go to a store and I buy a little jar of caraway seeds. And I put it in the glove compartment of my car. And one day we go picnicking someplace. And she's having toast, see, making a nice tuna sandwich and everything. I say, "Honey, I have a little surprise for you." And I take out the jar. I say, "Hey, you can sprinkle it on your bread." She says, "Caraway seeds? How do you know that I love caraway seeds?" Now, she had mentioned to me 5 years before. And I, and I as a quick learner... I put it in my mental bank of how I can surprise her with it. And she was delighted. She was delighted. So surprises are really, you know, fun. If really one. They're really fun. And, of course, you have to have good surprises. Yeah, you don't want to have bad surprises. You can't say, "Honey, by the way, you know, I went to an agency. We're bringing home a French maid who's going to do some cleaning every Monday. And she'll be here starting this Monday." Well, you know. But then I always think of one surprise that a woman can pull on her husband that does not include anybody in this room. Some women don't go to shul on Shabbos, okay? And you know, that's their custom. You know, I said their mothers didn't go, so they don't go to shul on Shabbos. So one day, go to shul and go to the back of the men's section and just look inside. And you see your husband talking a mile a minute to the two guys next to him. "I can't believe it. You know, he never talks. He's a quiet guy. He never talks. And he's talking a mile a minute, and I can't believe it," and chattering and this, and she watches for a half an hour. She can't believe it, and she goes home in disbelief. He comes home from shul. "Shabbos, you know, my throat is a little dry, so I think I'm just going to eat and take a nap. I can't talk. I mean, I just don't feel up to it." And she knows he's, you know why his throat is dry? He's been talking for 2 hours straight. And sure. So that's a bad surprise. Negative surprise. Okay, so, but the good surprises are all the things you can think of. And again, men, pick up all the clues that your wives will tell you what they really, really would like or would enjoy or dream of or someday will do this or that. So just write it down in some place that you won't forget. Okay. If you need a marriage counselor, keep searching until you find one. What happens if you're having problems? And, you know, you try to talk it out and try to work it out together. And, you know, you go to your friend, you talk first with each other, not going so well. And then you talk to a friend and maybe you talk to your rabbi. And then it's so you go to a professional today, unlike many years ago, to go to your therapist is fashionable. You know what I mean? So you go and get counseling. Get good counseling. A counseling is a subjective thing. You have to hit it. It's a chemical thing. You have to hit it off with a counselor. You understand? You can go to five counselors, and until you hit someone who really understands, really is into your head and your soul. So don't give up and saying, we went to a counselor, and I'm sure the counselor favors my husband and made me look bad. I'm never going back to him. And vice versa. So go for professional counseling. There are some good ones. And wait for that one. Be patient and keep searching. And when you find the right one, you'll know the difference. You'll know somebody who really, again, listens, can absorb, know what you're feeling. Because one thing about marriage is that it's a lifetime contract. It is not something that you discard or work around. And notwithstanding the high divorce rates today, which is a very sad thing, marriage is something if you from day one you think of as a lifetime contract. If it's broken or injured, you got to fix it. You can't walk away, and you can't hide your eyes to it. So you really have to fix it. And again, if it takes a good professional counselor, do it. It's the best investment. Whenever something happens in our house, we got a busy household. Something happens, and you know what? You spent $80 on this box of chocolate-covered, strawberries. The usual answer we usually have is it's cheaper than therapy. And it really is always right. Therapy is unfortunately very expensive. So anything you do, anytime something is expensive or out of line, what crazy? You had to go all the way back, then use up 2-5 gallons of gas. Are you crazy? It's cheaper than therapy. So you can remember that. Anyway, where were we? Another principle of marriage that I feel very strongly about is that it's a lifetime of giving. It's a lifetime of giving. And that's a wonderful theme to live by. You're giving to another person. And, this is common knowledge, that the donor is always happier than the recipient. Very often, the different kinds of giving, according to the Rambam, etc. But a lifetime of giving is a wonderful thing. You're thinking for two. And this is addressed to the men, for example. Now, if you get into your car, you're going to go with your wife for a trip. And it's going to be chilly out or something like that, and she's busy and she runs into the car last minute. You're taking your sweater, but you take a sweater for her. Or remind her to take her sweater. Because if she's chilled, then nobody's going to enjoy the ride, and it's kind of going to ruin the whole, trip. So, and if you, let's say there's a meeting here, okay? You come into this room, and the first thing you do is you look for two chairs. You don't look for a chair. So it's a lifetime of giving that you're thinking for two. And you're always looking for a way to treat and to bring out a smile on your mate's face. There are a zillion examples. For example, this is for the men. Men, you go to the bank. You make a bank deposit. They still make bank deposits? Anyway, so you're in the bank. So you get a roll of quarters for her car, for the meters. Oh, honey, here's a roll of quarters. Oh, what made you think of that? I really ran out of quarters yesterday. You're thinking for two, what kind of little treat can I get for my wife while I'm out? Well, if you go to a store of a stationery store and you see a little trinket of some kind, a little gift card or something like that, a little pack of thank you cards or something like that, you're thinking for two. It is such a wonderful way to live, to be giving to another soul and to and see that smile. What's your reward? The reward is the smile of the recipient. So marriage is a lifetime of giving. And again, it's a wonderful, thrilling theme to live by. And you get that wonderful, appreciative smile in return. That's part of being a good friend. That's really part of being a good friend. And you want to be at that close level together. Okay. And this is a principle for a man, and this is not an insult to a man. Don't listen. My principle is that if you give to your wife and you make her happy and give her a love and affection and attention and appreciation and support and encouragement. If you do that for your wife, she'll take care of the rest of the world for you. She will bring up the children. She will make your house looking gorgeous. She will find wonderful activities. She'll keep your house well stocked. It'll give her strength. It's like watering a flower. You go to a flower in a desert and it's kind of wilting and dry, and you pour some water over this flower, and that flower stands tall and proud just from the adding of a little bit of water and maybe a little sun, maybe a little fertilizer. And suddenly, so your wife will take care of the rest of the world for you. She'll send out birthday cards and thank you cards to all your relatives. Right? And I think you know what I'm talking about. And all sorts of notes. And also, she'll keep track of all your children's birthdays and someday your grandchildren's birthdays. And she'll keep track of everything. So a man has to take care of really, really, really one woman. And that's his wife. And really give her all that encouragement and love and support. And she can do so many, many things that we men, myself included, were not necessarily trained for or equipped for. You know, I got important things to think about, you know, racquetball, my next meal, you know, stuff like that. So that's a good general principle, I think, in terms of taking care of a woman. Okay. All right, any questions so far? Okay. I wrote down some summertime romantic ideas, things to do. By the way, if you don't do it already, here's a newspaper called the Enjoy section of the Poughkeepsie Journal. I belong to a bungalow colony near Poughkeepsie in Fishkill during the summer. And every Friday, I buy the entertainment section. Okay? So you don't need people to teach you where to go on a nice summer day. You should, you know, there are newspapers have sections on it, like the Newsday has the enjoyment section, right? The entertainment section. Know which day it comes out. Read it from cover to cover. Circle it. Share it. What can I do? What can I fit in this week? What can I afford? What do I have enough time for? You know, again, marriage is work, and fun is work, and romance is work. So you got to make the effort to have the information. You have the information. The other day, last week, and this stuff comes up every single day. We heard that there were fireworks upstate off Route 90 near Boscobel, near the Hudson River, okay? Near Cold Spring, if you know that area. Okay, so we heard that there is fireworks. So we drove up there. After a long, busy day of doing a lot of different things, and we get to Boscobel, where there's supposed to be fireworks in the back, according to the newspaper, so much for newspapers, and it was locked closed. They were overfull and could not let anybody in. So, but they says, why don't you go for a drive, make a right turn at such and such a drive, and go to Garrison Landing along the water, and he says, you'll see the people there. And we took a drive around. This is on a warm summer night, and it could have been July. Probably it was July 4th, which is a Monday. And we drove over there, and we see a million local residents who know the area sitting kind of almost on an amphitheater facing the Hudson River and right across the Hudson. And so where are they sitting on? Either they bring along chaise lounges or a blanket, or they had some extra chairs around, or they sit on a log or anything. And they are facing the Hudson River, and they're seeing fireworks up in the sky over the Hudson at a few different spots. And for that moment, I said, where is the rest of the world? This is the most magnificent sight. And we lucked upon this particular spot, but generally, you should try to find exciting things to add to your life. On a regular basis, not, well, you know, every other Sunday, I think we usually go on a little trip. My wife and I, again, since one of the principles is to get to know everything about each other and to spend time with each other and catch up with each other, we started out, I have busy work, you know, going out, to dinner one night a week. And then we graduated. I was in a business where I could change my schedule, and we started going out every Tuesday night. Okay, we had young children. And then we started expanding it from Tuesday night to Wednesday afternoon. We went away overnight, every single Tuesday night, for a period of about 20 years. All right, I'm serious. And it's wonderful. She worked, she was guidance counselor in a yeshiva in the Kew Garden Hills, and I was a veterinarian in Rego Park. And so we used to meet halfway, somewhere in Queens, a little side street. She used to drive over, I used to drive over. She used to get out of her car, carrying her little bag, and she slithered into my car. And we drove off, depending on the season, to an inn in Connecticut. You know, less than an hour ride. That was our summer. That was not a summer. That was our all-year-round romantic getaway. We checked in as Mr. and Mrs. John Smith. And this was our time to be romantic, illicit relationships, except we were married and we loved each other and we loved this routine. And you may say, well, that's good for you. You're a veterinarian. You know, you can arrange your schedule any way you want. But some businesses you can. You have to use your imagination. When can I get away? On a regular basis every week. Because you don't want to wait too long. Again, that envelope, you carry three envelopes in your pocket. You know, one time I went into a cup of coffee with my wife. And the waiter bent over and he says, boy, that's a long, it's a busy envelope this week. That means, you know, a lot of things are doing that we had to share, that I didn't want to, you know, forget and listen to her stuff, to what's doing. Anyway, so we went away for 20 years, every Tuesday and Wednesday. Tuesday and come back Wednesday, and we take the kids out to dinner on Wednesday night. So that was our reward for the kids. The kids went to school, okay, on Tuesday, and we got a babysitter. We had a fortunate to have a woman down the block who could, babysit. Good question. Who could come in and be reliable. But you get into trouble sooner or later. If you go away every Tuesday, Wednesday, it becomes more important than anything else. Because if a relative of yours said, I have wonderful news for you. Wonderful news. We just had a little baby boy, and the bris is Wednesday morning next week. Wednesday morning? You have a chazakah in Connecticut. What's this? So anyway, you slither to the floor in great sadness, wondering how you're going to worm out. That's where you pray very hard for a great inspiration, how to get out of it and still be a good brother or something, a good relative. Anyway, it's not so easy if you have because once you get to like something, it becomes a little enjoyment, a little preference. You're liking it a lot. Then it becomes an addiction, and then it becomes mandatory. You follow once you start going away and you like this routine. Anyway, but you do get into trouble when you go away. You know, like my daughter will come home and she gets a note from her teacher, on Tuesday night, please have your mother sign this note from the principal's office. So my daughter comes in Wednesday morning. She says, I'm sorry, but my mother was away last night. And then... And then, of course, the next Tuesday afternoon, of all the lousy luck, she gets another letter from the office. Make sure your mother signs this, a very important letter on a different subject. And she brings it home, and she comes back to school the next day. And she says, I'm sorry, my mother was away last night. Now, of course, the teacher has a right to be very, very suspicious. She sends it to the principal's office. Well, the story does have a good ending. I'm still here. I still have my daughter. Anyway, there was a teacher who lived a few houses from us who went into the principal and explained the whole situation. Okay? So I was not we were not evil, neglecting parents. But this was our night, our romantic honeymoon every week, or just almost every week, that we could do when we can be together and just recreate. That the first dating feeling, getting married, the whole feeling, which is a wonderful thing. So anyway, everybody should, of course, set aside time during the week with different subject that fixed in stone, that you should be able to spend time with each other's mates. And, you know, even if you have to, you have a busy work, and you go to a restaurant. Okay? You could say, well, I can't get away an overnight. Can we go to a restaurant? Sure, you can go to a restaurant. But don't sit right by the front door. I wrote a chapter in here, where to sit in the restaurant when you go out with your wife. You go all the way in the back. Okay? And you bring along that yellow sign from your car trunk. And it says, wet floors. And you put that right in front. You put that right in front of your table. Oh, nobody goes. Nobody bothers you. Okay, so you don't sit in the front and say hiya, Jaime. You greet every person coming in the restaurant. Get out of your neighborhood. This is your night with your wife, not your night with the neighborhood. With this groupie stuff. Anyway, so you want to hide someplace, and if unfortunately you only go out for dinner, you settle it. First of all, go out of your neighborhood, but don't sit by the front door and greet everybody. Oh, look at her, she's still going out with what's his name, and look what she's wearing. Didn't she wear that 2 weeks ago? You know, I mean, what is this? What is this? You're going out of this is a romantic interlude. So anyway, so make that special time that you're away with each other special. To this day, my wife and I, the first thing on the list of romantic ideas, my wife and I go camping every Tuesday night in the woods. Now, how did this happen? Now, of course, we always go, but when it first started, it's not so easy, camping. My wife says, all my friends, some of my friends are teachers, and they go with a trailer, they cross the country, they're off for 2 months. They have a wonderful time every summer. Why do you have to work so hard and never home? And when can we have the fun that other people have? So, I wrote this down someplace. And sure enough, on Mother's Day, I got her a tent. And I put it in the trunk. And he said, camping? I don't like bugs. I'm not so happy about bears. I don't like humidity. I don't like, walking so far to the bathroom in the middle of the night. I mean, I have 100 camping. That's for the cavemen, or something like that. And sure enough, I have to please the woman. She runs my whole life and sends birthday cards to my relatives. I have to be very good to her. So, sure enough, the first day we went camping was on a Tuesday night. We drove up to the campground. I had researched, got the number, got the directions, got the campsite, checked in, drive up to the thing, and it's getting dark. So I drove up, and I forgot one important thing, to open the box and read the directions on the tent. I had it in my trunk. So to the headlights of my car, I had to, read the directions and try to set it up. And which pole? The red pole goes next to the blue pole. And we finally got it up together. And we survived, and we got the tent up, and we've been camping ever since. And it's the most wonderful thing. So if you're looking for a romantic activity during the summer, it's not easy, and you have to overcome all these mental and physical handicaps. It's worth it. So we're going camping this week, and it is a wonderful activity.
How did you get your wife to overcome her disgust before camping?
She liked the idea. She liked the idea. She's an adventurer. She said, I was born in a bear park with a backyard the size of this table. So, she taught me to love the outdoors and look up. Oh, what's that? Oh, those are clouds. Oh. Trees. Wow. Two different kinds of green. Anyway, again, she opened my eyes. You want to learn from each other. You want to learn from each other. Very important principle. We go camping. And it's the most wonderful thing in the... what can I say about it? So we split the work. You may wonder who does what. So she does most of the work, I think, the most of the thinking work. She puts up the tent. Question.
Does this camping the same thing as the romantic interlude?
Right. This we use during the warm weather, during the summer season. Okay. What do we do during the winter season? On our usually, it's definitely on our anniversary, but when we go away, we go sledding on our anniversary every year, because our anniversary is in February, if you went to think. So, it go by the season. You do what's fitting for the season. And again, that's the most separate subject. Wonderful. Again, we're doing that, getting a little bit older, married 49 and a half years,
wow.
But sledding is wonder. It's still wonderful for those who went sledding when they were little kids. Haven't sled since then. It is still a wonderful activity. Okay, so where were we? All right, we get to the campsite. My wife puts up the tent, and I do the fire. They have a pit there where I bring along my wood in my car. You can look at my car. You better not look at my car. I have a lot of kindling wood. I have old newspapers. I have logs. And you make fires. And she brings along salmon, teriyaki sauce. And we have these big cast iron pans. And we put them on the grate. And we have the most delicious salmon every Tuesday night with hash brown potatoes. And so the appetizer is half of a cantaloupe, okay? Anyway, I don't want to get too detailed, but it's a wonderful... It's the most wonderful activity. Then we finish that, and we usually go to the theater that night, okay? And then for the next morning, she makes me French toast. The same big cast iron... we use egg beaters and cut up challah left over from Shabbos. Maple syrup, thermos of hot coffee plugged into the shower room. How can you do better in the whole world?
That's for dessert.
No, that's the main dish, the French toast.
When do you work?
A very good question. Very good question. This past week, I worked 4 days, four full days during the week, which is more than I worked. I do per diem work now as a veterinarian. I used to work less when I had my own practice, but now I'm working very, very long days. But we arrange it, so I'm off on Tuesdays. Usually work 3 days a week, Monday, Thursday, and Friday, so Tuesday and Wednesday we can go camping. And I have the schedule. Look up the schedule of what's playing at the theaters, what concerts are there, and what's the... can't say the word ballet here, right? This is OU? Oh, yeah. Okay. Concerts and theater. There's a lot of it around in the Tanglewood area. We drive up to that area. Okay. All right. So one of the... any questions so far on general principles of closeness in marriage and learning from each other and giving to each other forever? Go ahead. Yes, 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 and I will come to them. I'm going to go through this list. A bunch of things, right? Yeah, because in movies like you have, if you have the section, if you're a fan, you read about it Friday and it gives you for the rest of the week. So if you say, oh, gee, I may be off, Wednesday afternoon or whatever, you at least know what's around that interests you. It could be an antique show. It could be something, an art show. It doesn't have to be something that you're uncomfortable going to. And there's something for everybody. You just got to keep your eyes open and keep looking and searching and thinking fun. Because, again, you want to... What's the name of the title of this talk? Something about keeping the dating up and going. You want to keep dating. You want to keep... Like you did when you first met. You know what I mean? All fun things. Yeah.
I'm just wondering if when you bring a gift to your wife or you plan an activity, have you ever been off the mark?
Yes.
And gotten something that she didn't
know? Yes. Yes. I'll give you an example. We must have gone to a restaurant one time, and, while we were just waiting and just inside the front door, they had a huge fish tank in the wall. Beautiful, gorgeous, tropical fish. And bubbling oxygen or something, and gorgeous with greens and everything. But sitting there, and my wife went over, and she says, "Isn't that gorgeous?" I wrote that down. And I surprised her. One day she came home on a Friday afternoon, and I had snuck out early, and in our den was a big bubbling fish tank with a couple of fish in it. She expressed interest in it. Everything went wrong. I think the filter went into the motor and started chugging and smelling the room. The fish jumped out of the tank, and they're on the carpeting dead, or almost dead. And there, the kids were screaming, "Oh, look what happened!" I can tell you something. It got fuzzy and maintenance and fungus and all sorts of bad things. So again, I was an amateur starting, and I'm sure if I had to do that, you know, I took a course. Instead of, you know, surprises, I tell you, have their disadvantages. And again, so that was a disaster. All right? So the answer is yes to that. Sometimes you guess wrong. Any other questions? Okay. So let's talk about some summertime things, because you ask a good question. We finished with camping. All right. I used to, you know, write humor, you know, for a lot of the magazines. You know, Saturday Evening Post, Modern Maturity. It's a wonderful thing. I took a course one day. Take courses together. That's on the list. Take courses together. Learn together. I took a course on writing puns. Writing puns and sending them to magazines. And sure enough, I started writing it. In the first course, teacher says I was pretty good. So I, you know, send them things, and you write a cover letter, and you're allowed to send up to 3 magazines at one time, and you the same pun, and it's sold. $25. I got $50 from the Catholic Digest, and I felt so good. Not only to get the $50, but I was depleting the Catholic Church's money. Anyway, so you look for trouble. The whole idea is to poke around and look for trouble. The pun, I never made any money. I don't think I ever sent it in. But the pun would have been a very simple line. You see, the puns were from, let's say, Reader's Digest. Anybody remember Reader's Digest? Okay. So they used to have a serious article, and then near the bottom there was an inch. So they put one or two liners in between articles just to, you know, mix it up a little bit. What was the first one I made some money on? Hair transplants. Receding for the receding. $25 is $25. That's, you know, that's the come in the front door for the therapist. Just walking in the front door, it's $25. Okay, so so I was going to send one in after I went camping and say, you know, bear in mind many people do not like camping. Should I say it a little slower? Bear in mind, many people do not like camping. So you think of puns all day if you just write it down while you're driving. That's how I used to write them. That's how I wrote any book. You know, if I got an idea, I write that. And then, you know, when you get time, you write it out. So puns are wonderful. Oh, you know, really, really fun stuff. Really, over the years. I think the first pun I ever saw, which got me even knowing what the word pun meant, was in the Reader's Digest. It was not mine. Two of them. From the Reader's Digest, says, going at 80 miles an hour, the car approached the coroner. All right? So you know what that is. But my favorite pun from Reader's Digest, it's not mine. It's an OU convention. Gotta be careful what I say. So it said, this is a postcard from a traveling salesman from Florida to his wife in New York. It said, "Honey, the weather is beautiful." This is written on the postcard. "Weather is beautiful. Business is good. The sunshine is always present. I feel so happy. Wish you were her." That was my favorite. I didn't write it. And I give credit to the one who wrote it. Okay. All right, so it can't be. Go, now you're talking, these are obvious, go on nature walks, okay? Berry picking. Anybody still go berry picking? There are all sorts of orchards. We go, you know, we're in Dutchess County. And, you know, we went strawberry picking, you know, last month. And blueberry picking now, if they're still having them. These are fun things. These are things you did when you went to a bungalow colony when you were 10 years old. But why not now? It's part of the fun. It's so stay young. You know, people want to age too quickly. Oh, I work on the computer 12 hours a day. And I'm very, very smart. But get out there. Get out there. Get on your knees and pick berries. And of course, you know, you could pick berries. They have wonderful little farms, and they weigh you when you first come in. Then they weigh you when you go out. yeah.
Why? Maybe a dumb question, but this class is not titled "Things to Do for People Who Have Too Much Time on Their Hands."
Okay.
And I think most people here, our biggest challenge is not so much figuring out how to fill the blanks, but figuring out how to come up with the blank.
How to create the time to go away.
Right.
Is that right? You have to look at your schedule, I would say, and look to, and just you can sit down with a pencil and paper together and figure out what you do during the week, on which days, how long, what things are mandatory and what things are preferred and what things are you really have leeway with. So, you know, if somebody works, you know, from early in the morning, you know, it depends on your time schedule. So it works, you know, if you work 8 o'clock in the morning and you're home 8 o'clock at night and you're exhausted and you have to eat and you have clients to call and you have your read the email and everything like that, you have very, very little time. So, again, you won't be the first one. Again, this is very, very common. You have to figure out where do you have time. Is it on a public holiday? Is it on a sometime when your business is closed for some reason? You follow what I'm saying? Or if you're taking a short business trip, can you possibly take your wife with you and spend a little time, you know, looking for ideas in that town and discovering new things? That's an excellent question. But I tell you, if you have the desire, you will find it. I really feel that way. I wanted to get into commercials. I was a full-time veterinarian in Queens, in Rego Park. How do you combine both? 1 o'clock, I finished an appointment. Instead of a two-hour lunch hour, I used to jump into my clothes, get on the subway, take it into Manhattan, go for an audition, jump back on the subway, come back to my office, jump back into my work clothes, like nothing ever happened. But I made it happen because I made choices. Instead of going for a leisurely lunch or, you know, doing this or that or catching up with my reading or something like that, I wanted something badly, and I made it happen. And I don't know if I'm answering your question. There really is time. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'll get back to that. Yeah.
No, but as long as the question
was, yes.
Sometimes, especially I'm anticipating a lot, hopefully, I mean, for my business, Shabbos is really the most quality time. So
right.
We have to be creative on how to make, you know, really great time. And a lot of time on Shabbos with your wife and with your spouse, that's one of the most important challenges.
Okay.
And because it's not always, you can't always go on a Sunday bear eating or, you know, sledding or...
Okay. No, good point. Shabbos is difficult if you have little kids at the table. And that could take up most of the conversation at the table, and they're reviewing their learning during the week, and a couple of Dvar Torahs that can use up a long lunch and use up most of the day. Not so much now, but when the Shabbos is really short, for example. But I would say it's more of a mindset. If you want it to happen, you will take a walk with your wife when you get home from shul before you have lunch. You will plan something for Saturday night. It may not be Shabbos daytime. Because the kids are up and around and need your... That's the time when they have you. You're not always around, so that's when your kids have you, and you have to give your kids time. So that's when you have to share it. But when the kids go to sleep or whatever, or you set certain schedules, you know, some kids go to sleep at midnight. And some people in some houses, it's very strict. At 7 o'clock, they're in bed. So it depends on the ages of the kids and what you want. If you want it strongly enough, you follow what I'm saying, you're going to find the spaces. You will find the spaces. And if you're innovative and creative, you'll find how, if your wife has off, you know, if she's working too, you have a double problem. How to, if you get some space in your business, does it coincide with her time off? But you have to be searching for that as a goal, as a really, and you may have to put off other goals, which go for a different time when your work pressure eases up a little bit. But that is a very, very good question. Sorry.
I might suggest something. Some Englewood, and recently there was a couple in Shul that I didn't recognize. I said hello, and they had found a hotel not too far from our Shul, a Hilton, and they were from a town, I think Clifton or something. They had their kids go somewhere. They went to that hotel for Shabbat. They came to our Shul for Shul. They brought their food, and they were so happy that they took that little vacation. It was a Shabbat vacation, and that really worked for them.
Okay. And now, you didn't bring up how the ages of your children, if you have children, because that's a big factor. Either of you two, you had a similar question. Because, and you know, some people never get a babysitter their whole lives. You follow what I'm saying? The kids are up in a restaurant with their parents, till 11 o'clock at night. Well, you know, that's one style. Okay, I'm not saying it's bad, I'm not judging it, but I'm saying you are never free. Well, unless their mother-in-law or mother is free, they don't have a babysitter. Now, that's one mindset, that's one point of view. I did not practice it, so I was more free. I mean, I was very responsible in who we watch a babysitter, if we get an older woman or something, rather than a young teenager. But I was relentless in finding time to get away free. And again, I was a veterinarian, different than other businesses, but I had a very, very busy work week, And I created and made it happen and modified it because that's what I wanted. Can you do it in every business? Where you, if you're self-employed, of course, you can set your own time. If you work in a business where you're given a certain deadlines and schedules, my son-in-law works until 3 o'clock in the morning. And wakes up at 6 o'clock in the morning. So he doesn't have too many options. But he's a fun lover, too. Boy, you let him out of the cage, and he has a little speed time. He won't waste 1 second of not having fun. So your question is excellent, but it has to be a high priority, which means work and being creative and being imaginative. What can we do if can we combine this with that? On our way home from this, why don't we stop off this and we'll pick up the kids after that and take that in. The question is how hard you want it. And sometimes it is taught. It is taught. So so that's just an opinion. Sometimes you didn't grow up with that and you're very faithful and stick to the line and certain time you have to get up and finish. You can get away from the inflexibility and find the little spaces. All right, any other questions? Okay, well, thank you very much.